Hello and welcome to episode 47 of the Experience Points podcast for October 14th, 2009.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Chester.
I'm George Alpour.
We are the co-creators of experiencepoints.blogspot.com, a website we created and dedicated to the serious but not humorless analysis of video games and culture. And today we have a special guest on, Justin Kevern.
Woo!
Justin, how are you doing?
All right, how are you doing?
Good.
Good, we're glad to have you on the show.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, not a problem. We like to give people a break from just the two of us, you know, lull them into a sense of complacency and then just spring a guest on them every once in a while.
Plus, everybody loves British accents.
That's true. Americans, anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah, I keep hearing that. I think I might need to go to America and find that out.
You should.
I think it would turn out to be a very fruitful trip for you, my friend. So Justin writes gropingtheelephant.wordpress.com, and if you read our site, there's a pretty high likelihood that you have happened upon his site as well. He writes about game design, he does critical analysis, and he posts his own work on designs that he makes. So Justin, how did you decide to start your own website, and what were your goals when you were kind of jumping into it?
Well, Groping the Elephant is, I think, it's probably the fourth time I've started, and then it's the only one that's really kept going, because I think I've found other people like yourself and Michael Abbott, the Wayne Gamer, to talk with and chat with and just kind of like build a community with. So I can't even remember why I started the first ones, but I just liked, I mean, I had all these ideas about games and design, and I just wanted to put them somewhere. And so, yeah,
well, all of your blogs about games, your previous three, were they also game-related websites?
One was basically a live journal, so it was mostly game-related stuff, because that's mostly what I think about. There was the occasional really emo post about, you know, how my cat's ignoring me or something. But, yeah, most of it was game design, because I kind of don't think about anything else, which is a little worrying.
We know how you feel.
Yeah, we're pretty much on the same page there.
Were the names of those blogs as exciting as Groping the Elephant?
No, I don't think so. A couple of programming jokes, but they were not that funny.
Okay.
And the byline is cool, too. It's a...
What I've got is the Pragmatic Fumbles in the Darkness by a Gaming Industry Outsider.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's a really cool byline, because you can see the development of it as your site goes on, right? Like, you're now pretty heavily into, you know, designing your own... Because you're working on a level in the Unreal 3 engine, right?
Yep.
And
not my first, but yeah,
it's cool to see that documented, though, right? So you're going, you know, because the most of us were just kind of talking in the wind when we talk about game design, right? The last game I've designed was a horrifically crappy level in Little Big Planet.
D&D is all I've got.
Yeah, and you also are pretty involved in the Video Games and Human Values Initiative project, right?
Yeah, Roger Travis put a call out for articles and something about game design and how it changes your view, or I can't remember explicitly what he was asking for, but and I've been writing this piece about Assassin's Creed for a while, and it didn't seem like the right kind of thing for my site. It was it was about 1,000 words longer than most of the articles I write.
Yeah. Also pretty timely now that Assassin's Creed 2 is coming out.
It worked out very well. We would like the article. We'll go ahead and put it up in the show notes too for people to check out. So.
Yeah, it's a good piece of work. So this week we're going to go into something that Nils Anderson wrote, the only other guest on the Experience Points podcast.
Oddly enough,
weird.
Yeah.
And it's an article that he wrote on his website, Above 49, and it was titled "And They Both Rot Your Brain." And he explores the parallels between games and television, something that usually gets overlooked in favor of people examining film and video games and comparing them. So we're gonna jump in. We're gonna talk a little bit about his article and then discuss what kinds of video games we feel follow the TV format, or what games might benefit from following a TV format, both in a narrative sense and possibly mechanical sense. It gets a bit complicated with that, but yeah, we'll puzzle our way through it.
Well, why don't we see, go off with some of your thoughts, Justin, if you've got, I mean, you were the one who mentioned this article as something that you were particularly interested in. Mm-hmm. What kind of caught your eye when you first read this one?
Well, if we ignore the Citizen Kane reference at the beginning, that I think is getting a bit passe.
I think we should, yes.
Just the general idea of just comparing games to TV series, it's certainly one I've had before, and I guess my formative experiences in media were not really film. They were long-form TV shows and books, so the idea of comparing games to those two media are far more logical to me than they are to comparing it to film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, certainly in terms of just the length of time and the manner in which you approach them. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many people complete a game in a single sitting? But
is it even possible to complete a game in a single sitting? You know, sometimes there's just more hours in the game than there are in the day.
Yeah.
Well, I've seen it done. No, I have a friend. He's a game programmer at Sumo Digital in the UK, and I think it's every year he completes the first Quake. And I sat there and watched him do it one day.
Wow.
And he does it in one sitting.
Oh, jeez. He must be a savant at that point, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's both awe-inspiring and decidedly terrifying at the same time.
I think another interesting aspect between the television and the film is just how you consume it. You know, I mean, I see a lot of films in theaters where I'm by myself, it's in the dark, I can be devoted to that. Uh-huh. And I think television tends to come with all of those in-your-living-space distractions, you know, that games also come with.
You mean like just mundane distractions? Yeah, just like mundane, friends walking in the room?
Yeah, the tea goes off, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Huh. So how does that impact how you would experience it? I mean, is it something that is more casual then? I mean, and not casual saying like Peggle, just casual and saying that you don't have to devote 100% of your attention to it.
Well, I mean, I agree with you, Justin, in saying that it seems more logical to me to think about games as television. But when I think about the play experience, I would prefer to have it closer to the play experience of a film. You know, like the friend you mentioned who plays through all of Quake in one sitting. It seems like a better experience than breaking it up throughout weeks, even.
Hmm. So would you do the same thing with a book, then? Like, if you could read as fast as possible, would you read all of Thomas Pynchon's new book in one sitting?
That's why I only read children's novels.
I did read the last Harry Potter book in one sitting.
I think the parallel between how we consume it is something that's good to touch on, especially because I feel like our generation really came of age when TV was a legitimate alternative to the cinema, right? I mean, there were TV series that started having developed enough characters and storylines for that to be an option to see that kind of narrative.
Yeah.
And, you know, and now I think it's even better, like things like Deadwood or Sopranos. Some people would like Lost just as much as most movies. I think at a certain point, there's a quality thing to it. I don't know. What do you think, Justin? I mean, you're from the land of miniseries. They don't have a lot of those in the States, but I know in the UK, there's a pretty big tradition of episodic storytelling, but in the miniseries, like a very set beginning and end time.
Well, I mean, Doctor Who's been going on for how many years
Well, you know what?
Yeah, but before they brought Doctor Who back, it was originally 4 episodes of 25 minutes on a single story.
Mm-hmm.
And since they brought it back, it's 45 minute episodes, but it's only a 13 episode season. So,
yeah,
I mean, most of our TV dramas, unless we're talking about soap operas, are certainly only, they're only maybe 6 episodes or 13.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's maybe 2 hour long episodes or something, one night, one the next night, or one Saturday, one the next Saturday.
Oh, wow.
So we certainly do have a shorter form TV experience, I think. Yeah.
Even in regular series too, I remember watching the show Coupling, and it was, you know, for all intents and purposes a sitcom, but it was in that British format of short seasons broken up. But I mean, and that's been the way for a long time. Like The Prisoner is one of my favorite TV series, and that's one of those short form, like quasi mini series type thing that I think tells a great story. Actually, they're remaking it, which is weird, with Ian McClellan in it. Did you guys know that?
No, I had no
idea. Yeah.
It's very weird.
Is that the one where the guy goes to the island?
Yes.
Huh.
Plus, Patrick McGoohan is just cool. I mean, who doesn't want to be that guy?
Oh, so correct me if I'm wrong, though. The Prisoner was cancelled before it was finished, right?
I'm not sure. They did have an ending, though. I know that. I don't know if that was the ending they wanted, but they certainly made an episode that was an ending.
Huh. That's a pretty good tie-in to talk about games. So, like, we're waxing philosophic about TV shows here, but what if we, you know, in the traditional sense, when I hear episodic gaming, I think of something like what Telltale does, or something that actually sells you discrete episodes. What if there was a game, let's say Fable 2 is doing this now, it's becoming episodic. What if Fable 2 started as episodic and then it didn't sell well? You know, would we be without an ending for games? How would episodic gameplay with the possibility of it being canceled, how would that change the way stories would have to be designed?
Well, with Fable, you've obviously got the issue that it is already completed. They have made it all. They're now going back and releasing it as episodes. So
yeah.
I assume even if they don't sell well, they can just keep doing it, because it probably costs them not a huge amount to do it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, what if they had started just as episodes? Peter Molyneux sat down and was like, okay, I have this idea for 30 discrete play segments, and then all of a sudden it tanked.
When I think of television and the single episodes, you get that, or at least I get this fear that not only will the show be canceled if I'm into it, but that the designers, the producers don't really know where the show is going.
Mm-hmm.
And Nels mentions this in his post, that TV tends to be more freeform during the production process, where what happens in season two or even eight episodes later is just a foggy idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I have that same fear when approaching episodic games, that maybe they're putting off the longer form content or maybe the more dramatic story arcs for later in the season, and that it's not fulfilling because of that, you know?
So what you're saying is filler.
Yeah,
and the filler might waste their opportunity, and then they get canceled before you get through the filler.
Yeah, I mean, but again, this is presuming designers who weren't thinking ahead.
Yeah, which doesn't make sense. They would be thinking ahead.
But, I mean, again, like, we get television every week. There's a new episode. I mean, of course, there's reruns and there's the summer break between seasons.
Mm-hmm.
But the break between episodic game content tends to be pretty large.
Mm-hmm.
In The Rainstick Precipice of Darkness, two episodes was quite a bit of ways apart.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what Sam and Max, how quickly they're pumping up content.
Mm-hmm.
But they're pretty regular. It's either 2 weeks. I think it's every fortnight.
Yeah, I mean, it's at least once a month, right? I mean, even if they do miss a week here and there. Have you been playing any episodic games, Justin?
I kind of got burnt on episodic games because I was one of the people to pick up Sin Episodes, and that never went anywhere.
Oh.
Yeah, what happened with Sin Episodes?
Like,
what was the
deal
with that?
It was supposed to be a big episodic thing, and the first one ends on a coming next episode, and a big, like, this is what's going to happen. And then you just hear nothing for months on end. And eventually you find out that Ritual, who are making it, were bought by Mumbo Jumbo and are now making casual games. And it's like,
oh man.
that's a blow to the heart.
What was the payment structure like for it?
Well, I only bought the one, and I think it was just going to be you buy one and then buy another one.
Uh-huh.
But
it was, because I know, you know, things like iTunes, and they might start doing this. I think they actually do this for the Sam and Max games. You can buy season passes for it. And so, that's one of the dangers. I mean, just looking at it from a consumerist type view, if a game gets quote-unquote canceled, you know, how will that affect pricing, and how will that affect your expectation going into it?
Yeah.
Go ahead, George.
I mean, I guess what we're talking about here is the idea that the comparison of games to television, if it were stronger potentially, would result in design choices that would bring games closer to television. Because, I mean, do you think that we get that now already, that games tend to be, I mean, I know Justin and I both said that it seems natural for us to compare games to television, but for a lot of people, it's natural to compare games to movies, and that it almost seems like games take their cues from movies too often.
Maybe from a visual sense, like the way that the camera work is done and the scope of the story. I mean, it's like when you play Gears of War or something, you're playing a specific storyline that seems just ripped out of a Hollywood blockbuster that never made the cut, right? And, I mean, it is meant to be told in basically one sitting. It's not meant to be a series of episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't necessarily think that that's a bad way to do it. I mean, I hate to bring it up, but Portal is something where it's one of the most beautiful games that I've ever played as far as a narrative goes, because it's such a unified experience. Like, it has a complete arc throughout the entire game. It's not something that needs to be broken up, or that I think would even benefit from being broken up.
So you would say that Portal is filmic?
Kind of. I mean, it's just, that's the thing. Like, it is structured in a way that you might get the most out of it by simply playing it from beginning to end, rather than it discovering the narrative as episodes go along. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I haven't played the Half-Life episodes. Justin, have you played those?
Yeah, I was just thinking of bringing up Half-Life there. Mm. The reason I think the Half-Life episodes work is because Half-Life itself is virtually episodic.
Mm-hmm.
If you play it, you have chapters, and each chapter is generally focused on a specific location, a specific gameplay mechanic.
Yeah, that's true.
You could play one chapter a day, chapter a week, and it wouldn't feel out of place or strange. There are certain ideas that carry through, and like certain story arcs and base mechanics that carry through. So you start Ravenholm or something one day, and then the next day play
the water, like where you're on the little cart.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whichever order they go in, whatever, I forget. But yeah, they are almost like self-contained episodes in themselves, and that's why I think the Half-Life episodes work. They take a group of chapters with different gameplay mechanics, put them together, and release it as an episode.
And Nils touches on that towards the end of his article. He talks about mechanics building on each other the way that episodes of 24 or Lost or Deadwood build on each other. Like, you couldn't just jump in to, you know, three quarters of the way through Half-Life and have as good of an experience as you could building it up from the beginning, because part of that is the mechanical building of it.
But then some of the better parts of that game, and certainly some of the better parts of other games, I've got a specific example in mind that I'll get to in a moment, but are the, what in TV parlance would be called the format breakers.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that do something outside the norm. Like in Half-Life 2, you get the bug bait, and you're using it to guide the antlions around.
Oh, that's
even crazy. If you've never played any other, you don't necessarily need to know the mechanics of the other parts of that game to play that part. It's effectively a format breaker. It's giving you a new mechanic for a specific episode, you know, in air quotes.
Yeah.
And letting you have fun changing the standard formula.
And so a format breaker in television, could you give us an example? Maybe like an episode that's filmed in noir instead of the sitcom style?
Do you watch Heroes at all?
The first season I watched Heroes, yeah.
The first season, yeah. There's a great example from the first season of Heroes called Company Man that's focused on HRG, Claire's dad.
Oh, is that?
And it's
is that the episode where they don't really leave their house?
Yeah, that episode.
It's amazing.
And most
episode.
Of it's flashbacks to how he met, how he started and got involved, and where Claire came from, and all that.
Right.
And that's a format breaker. Most of the other episodes in that season focus on multiple characters in an episode.
Mm-hmm.
This one's just one character, one location, and very flashback heavy, which it's not usually done.
Wouldn't you say that that episode succeeds because it is in contrast to the other set of episodes? Whereas something like Half-Life might flounder if they have one episode that's very different, but everything else maintains the same game mechanics and general level design.
Well, I mean, are you just asking the question of how to make it... Because, I mean, let's take... I don't know, in Cowboy Bebop, there's an episode where they're all infected by some mutated food. Remember that episode?
Yeah,
have you seen Cowboy Bebop?
Not enough.
Okay, there's an episode that kind of takes a break from the whole bounty hunter type thing, and is basically a horror movie episode, where there's some food that they left in the refrigerator too long, it becomes sentient, and starts killing them.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have anything to do with the broader story, but... And it's shot as if it were like a Halloween or an alien movie or something like that.
Yeah.
And see, because I think at that point you're starting to talk about personal taste, right? Because it's different from the regular format, just as how the, you know, just as how maybe if you get an episode in Half-Life that is different from the mechanical things that you've built upon before. I mean, if you like that, then that's fine for you. If you don't, rather than a format breaker, it just becomes... it just becomes something out of left field.
But that's the appeal of the format breaker, though, because you understand that it's not, the rest of the game's not going to be like that. You understand that for this one specific moment, you're doing something different.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you don't like it, it's over quickly enough that you're like, okay, I can accept it. And if you do like it, you're like, oh, that was fun.
I guess I just feel like that games have a more of a pressure to make each episode or scene in the game different in a significant way, be it mechanics, be it level design, be it even just something like aesthetics. Whereas in television, if they were to maintain that trend of changing significant portions of the show each week, mm-hmm. it would be too jarring for the viewer. Whereas players almost need that in order to maintain their interest.
So you might get bored because on a mechanical level it'd be repetitive, is what you're saying.
I mean, in the comparison of television to video games, yeah.
Yeah.
It seems to imply that all gamers have ADD, though, doesn't it? That we need the new and the different, and it can't be the same as what's gone before, and it must be different, and it must be new, and it must be special, and we must have never seen it. It seems to be doing a disservice to gamers, and just assuming that...
That's true.
There's nothing wrong with solid mechanics. There's nothing wrong with a really good core idea, if it is fun, if it is engaging enough to take you through.
Sure, yeah. Mechanics-wise, I guess I could point out aesthetics and say, you know, the level design needs to change to maintain your interest, or you need to use your mechanics in different ways.
Well, I mean, that's more subtle. I mean, we're kind of using, like, MDA framework parlance here, but this is where dynamics would come into play, right? You know, shooting, jumping, gravity gun, whatever, are all tools that you can use, but... And Portal is, again, a good example of it. You only use a couple tools in Portal, but the dynamics change as you continue through the levels. Sometimes you're jumping, sometimes you're flinging yourself, others combat-focused. And so the mechanics are the same. It's just what you're doing. It's like having a... It's like having a TV series where you have a strong central character like Al Swearengen from Deadwood, and every once in a while Al Swearengen gets put in a weird situation that he's not used to. Mm-hmm. He still operates as the same character, but it's interesting to see the dynamics of him being in a different situation.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's what you're going for. Or maybe you just hate us and you think we have ADD.
I just hate gamers. Maybe that's probably...
Sorry, have either of you played Thief 3 or Thief Deadly Shadows?
I have not.
I knew you were going to ask that because you love Thief.
Yep. No, but I may have to spoil it for people.
No, go ahead. Fine. I mean, I'm so...
Yeah.
The single best example of a format breaker, I think, is in that game. Most of the game's standard Thief mechanics. Each level's reasonably different, which, you know, caters to the ADD-ness. But the penultimate level is the cradle. Aesthetically, it looks different to every other area.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the mechanics, the base mechanics don't change in that level, but most of the tools you've got are useless. Mm-hmm. The tools you get in Thief are water arrows to turn out torches, moss arrows to cover floors so you're not heard when running across them,
mm-hmm.
Climbing gloves, climb walls, things like that. There are no torches in the first part of the cradle.
Mm-hmm.
There are no walls you can climb. There are, in fact, no enemies. You don't know that going in.
Mm-hmm.
So most of your mechanics simply don't work. So you go into this area with this big subset of tools and equipment and with an understanding of how the game works. You go into this area and suddenly none of it works. The rules aren't broken. It's just none of your tool set is of any use to you. The dynamics have totally changed, and that changes the aesthetics of the gameplay. So instead of running around, or I don't know, creeping around, turning off putting out torches and blackjacking guards over the head, you're creeping around actually scared of the dark for once. And
that's cool.
One of the first objectives is to turn the light on, and the moment you turn the light on, it comes on with such noise and such like juddering of the entire building that you must have woken up everything within, you know, everything that could possibly be there. And so the moment you turn the lights on, your first reaction is, oh, I want to turn the mic off again.
How does this... keep going. Go ahead.
It's just... And that's just the... all the levels in Thief 3 are split into two parts. So technical issues I won't get into. But... And you get into the second part, and finally there are enemies, in quotes. But again, most of your tools don't work. There are no torches, and no walls to climb. It just... It strips everything back to the most base mechanics of the game. And... It's a format breaker in both a visual and storyline and aesthetic sense and a mechanical sense. And it's just an incredible feeling because it's the penultimate level of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a fear that you spent so much time in this level compared to all the others that you start to wonder if you're ever actually going to leave this place. And there's a fantastic article by Kieran Gillen of Rock Paper Shotgun, and now a comic writer for Marvel, I believe.
Oh, wow.
who talks about the cradle, and he also interviews Jordan Thomas, who was the designer on the cradle, who also designed Fort Frolic for Bioshock, and is now the creative lead of Bioshock 2. That fact alone is making me rather excited about Bioshock 2. But yeah, it's the most powerful experience, possibly the most powerful experience I've had in the game, just the sheer fact of I can't do any of the things I thought I could do, and it's probably the only game level I know that has actually scared me.
Nice.
Most games don't scare me, I guess I'm a cynical, jaded Englishman. No, it's us Englishmen, we're all just cynical about everything. It's like, yeah, you've got to do better than that. And there's a bit, well, I'm just crawling up these stairs, and there's like a hammering on the door upstairs, the door above the stairs, and I can remember actually being in the room I was in playing it, and I just like pushed myself away from the chair and was like, I'm going to take a rest now.
Not because I'm scared, I just got to stretch my legs.
Yeah.
Stretch my legs.
Remind yourself how British you are.
Yeah. So I have a question, and this is coming from someone who has not played Thief or Assassin's Creed. I am under the impression that the last level in Assassin's Creed is completely different from what you're doing for the rest of your time in the game. It kind of becomes a beat 'em up suddenly, and to many people's chagrin. So what is the difference, if that's true? And George, you play Assassin's Creed too. So like, what is the difference between something that Assassin's Creed does at the end and something that Thief 3 did at the end?
Well, really, up to that point in Assassin's Creed, you're getting an increasingly larger fight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'll fight maybe 4 guards, then 10 guards, then 20 guards, then 30 guards. Mm-hmm. So by the time you get to the end, then you're just continuously fighting guard after guard after guard.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel as unusual. It's repetitive and boring and annoying, and you want it to be over with.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't feel as shocking. It's not like you suddenly gone from fighting 2 guards to fighting 100 guards.
Mm-hmm.
The level before the cradle, you have all of the tools you're ever going to get in the game. You played enough of the game to understand how all these tools work. You're doing things that at the beginning of the game would have felt absurd, because you understand the mechanics enough to be able to know, I can fire that and hit that from here, and then go to there and do that, and then that, and then that.
Yeah.
And you become a master of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then in an instant it goes, none of that matters. All that stuff you learned doesn't mean anything. It doesn't take away the mechanics, but it just means that your mastery is for naught, because the rules have changed and suddenly everything you know is meaningless.
Hmm.
Yeah, and that never really happens in Assassin's Creed. Even the final boss, who has some sort of, you know, he fights a little differently because he's magically imbued, but your skills never change. So it never feels like you are, your environment has changed as much. You're just changing your tactics.
So it's a combination of gradual upping of combat and the fact that they don't really take away your tactics.
Right, I wouldn't call it a format breaker. But I have another question, and this goes to Nell's mention of Fallout, because he says that some of the side quests felt to him like episodic moments in a television series, but it seems to me that the larger open world environments are much farther removed from the television comparison, if for no other reason than it's not a linear experience, right? There's no... there are levels in Fallout 3, I'm thinking particularly of the, I don't know, Oasis, the Oasis area, felt very different.
The Dunwich building, which is very Lovecraft.
Exactly, they feel different, but the mechanics don't really change, and also there's no control over pacing.
Mm.
And I always felt that television succeeded because it had the time and the patience to make the story arcs well-paced, better than some films could manage within an hour and a half to 2 hour format. But in a game where you can't really control how quickly your players proceed through them, especially in a world as large as Fallout, you know, I feel like it kind of falls apart.
How did you feel about the Fallout side quests or interstitial missions, Justin? Did you feel they were episodic or just kind of tangential, I guess?
I remember someone referring to Fallout 3 as like an anthology of the Wasteland.
Hmm.
And that's sort of how I saw it. It's like a dozen or more stories around a theme, but not necessarily about the same the same story. I mean, the character you play, outside of the main storyline, the character you play is kind of irrelevant in most of the side quests and optional dungeons and such.
Because they would exist whether or not your character was like it is. Yeah.
You could be any character, and because you could visit them at any time in your character development, you are almost... You are just an observer to those events. It's only the central story in which you are a participant.
So, I mean, in the television comparison, then, you'd say that the player is kind of like the camera in that sense.
Sort of. There's a great... I mean, I grew up... My formative TV experience is Babylon 5. So, but there's a great episode in one of the later seasons of that where you don't... You're not playing... Or you're playing? Jeez, that's a...
We started to do that more and more. I started calling the good, the bad, and the ugly a game last week or something like that. It was weird.
Yeah. Would you call Call of War as a film?
Or yeah, kind of, yeah. We're becoming... It's becoming the Unity.
Yeah. But it's an episode where, instead of following any of the main characters, you follow these two... maintenance workers. Mm-hmm. I think it's called View from the Gallery or something like that.
I like that idea. Yeah,
that's how I sort of feel about some of the parts of Fallout where you're not necessarily the main character. You're just this bit part who's interfering in these people's lives, and it's only in this main story about your dad and Project Eden. I can't remember. I don't know. I forget. I'm sorry. Someone's going to be. He's screaming at the iPod now. Going, but yeah, but it's only in the main quest that you are of any import, really.
I like that. That's a good one. I mean, I think Fallout 3 then in that case works, but maybe as like another counterexample, like something like Far Cry 2 makes less sense to me because there's less interaction with NPCs and third-party characters, but
I mean we got into this a little bit when we were talking about tragic or ambiguous endings. And my argument was that if you let people create their own content in Far Cry or The Sims or whatever more open game that you're talking about, if they want it to be episodic, they could. Like I could see playing Far Cry in a certain way as to. Structure my playtime as be like, all right, in this episode, I talk with this person at the bar, and then we decide to go fuck up a radio tower or something.
Yeah, but
like
I mean,
that.
I could talk to myself and make a cool little, you know, voiceover whenever I want.
How dare you, George? But I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, if we're talking about episodic games as structured by the designers, right?
Yeah.
Could you just as easily play The Sims in an episodic way? Like, every single... You know, every family or every week that you have is its own storyline. This week, the person loses their job, you know, and we have to figure out how that's going to resolve itself. I mean, it's not about a grand narrative like Fallout 3, but it's about something that is designed by the player. I don't know.
Well, listen.
Go ahead.
Isn't that what Ben Abraham is doing with Far Cry 2, effectively?
That's what I think.
He's imposed his permanent death.
Yeah.
And he's then written up each one almost as an episode. Yeah, even he had a format. Even he had a format breaker. He had one that was narrated by somebody who wasn't his player character. Even he's in his own way playing with the format. It's certainly something. I mean, the idea of changing the rules and playing with yourself is certainly an interesting idea, and it's certainly one I think people are doing. I'm sure there are stories about people's time in The Sims.
The homeless family.
Alex and Kev, and that's coming. It, yeah. It's going to end soon.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised if that's heavily influenced by episodic formatting and structure.
Yeah, I haven't been following it for a while now. I'll be interested to see how it has formed as it's gone on, because it's hard to. It's you know, I see your point about like, oh, I could make a story at any time. Like, it's hard to structure it. And be disciplined about it, like if you're actually going to have a beginning and an end time, and also pay attention to a larger story while you're playing it. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of pre-planning to do. But I don't know. It just seems like it's weird because I've never really thought of myself as in the Clint Hawking type camp as far as game design goes. But I seem to be making a lot of similar arguments these days. What is happening to me,
he's
George?
He's changing you, Scott.
Truly.
I can't say I agree with him on everything, but certainly he's he's got some very interesting views, and he's certainly a lot smarter than I am.
So to kind of kind of wrap things up, I was thinking about what games I would like to see follow a format that tried to borrow a bit more from television episodes, you know, in the vein of something like The Sopranos or something, rather than big epic movies like, mm-hmm. Troy or something like that. And I was wondering your guys' thoughts on this. One game that I was thinking of, and it's because I saw a preview of this just this week, was Grand Theft Auto 4. I would have been way more inclined to play Grand Theft... I still haven't played Grand Theft Auto 4 because I was just too scared of the commitment going in.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't seem episodic enough to me. It felt like I could never stop playing that game and I would never be done playing that game. Mm-hmm. But now that I see Ballad of Gay Tony's coming out, the motorcycle game episode is out, that's something that's much more... Yeah, Lost and Damned. It's something much more appealing to me because it feels like it's tighter. It's more manageable, and they seem to pay more attention to having a clean story there.
I mean, they're even packaging Liberty City Stories into one thing that you could play without even owning Grand Theft Auto 4.
Yeah, so maybe that's what I'll end up doing. I don't know. Justin, what do you think? What game would you enjoy seeing a more episodic format, or just more related to television format?
See, I feel like I need to pick another one now, because I was going to go for GTA 4
Ooh.
As well.
Oh man, we're such great hosts.
But it's... but it's just the idea of Liberty City is the city, and the amount of stories you could tell in that is incredible. It's like, I mean, to bring up the catch-all TV show, The Wire, you could do The Wire in Liberty City. You could have stories from the police perspective, the drug dealer perspective, well, most of them are from the drug dealer perspective. But, I mean, I guess maybe I need to think of something else now.
What would you think? Do you think something like... a big kind of soda and popcorn, big dumb action game like Gears of War Do you think that would benefit from something like
this? Well, because surely, like, Marcus Fenix has much more in common with John McClane from the Die Hard film series than he does with Jack Bauer from 24, you know?
Well, he has more in common with a slab of meat than he does with Jack Bauer.
I mean, like, what if they... Because would that make it possible to make a more fleshed-out Gears of War universe? Because you would have many storylines where you'd have to explore the facets of the world that they lived in, rather than just kind of aping a two-hour Die Hard movie. Like, would you get a deeper thing, or would it just be more grunting and saying, fuck yeah, for, you know, a smaller amount of time?
I'm not sure how much depth there really is in the Gears universe to pull it off. God, I feel terrible, but the thing is, ODST, the Halo 3 ODST, in a lot of ways, that's almost structured like a TV show.
Because it's flashback-based, right?
Yeah, and each flashback is a specific character.
Mm-hmm.
And also, generally, a specific mechanic. Like, one is the flying, the ghost. Yeah, the ghost. Mm-hmm. One is driving the tank. One is a sniper-focused one. It's almost episodic itself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean... I agree with Michael Abbott that they didn't necessarily take that as far as they could have taken that, but certainly it was interesting to see.
And when you put it that way, it's a juxtaposition from Master Chief, because Master Chief is very much the movie star hero. Like, he is there to solve a problem in one sitting, you know, even though you might not be able to play it in one sitting, he's there to solve a big world-ending problem rather than follow the narratives of a bunch of secondary characters.
Yeah, I would add MMOs to the list. Mm. I didn't mention. I think World of Warcraft already has, a feel like television, especially if you're going to go with a Fallout 3 side quests being sort of episodic. But the idea that seasons have season finales and certain moments of of character development or story arcs, I think would be something cool to add to. MMO universes, if for no other reason than they tend to feel stagnant in their persistence. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see more world events, that kind of thing.
You mean, so some people might argue the episodes are like Get Me 5 Rat Tails, but you would say instead of doing that, you would say add an episode into, or I guess in this case it would be instance.
Well, I mean, but
that would be much longer.
I guess you could say instance in MMOs tend to be like they're episodic, but I mean actual in-world events that include you as a character, as opposed to just everything else. So, I mean, maybe it's asking a lot.
Wasn't there a big zombie outbreak or something?
Yeah, there was a zombie outbreak, and I loved that zombie outbreak in World of Warcraft. It changed, again, it was a format breaker, right? Because I could play as an undead character and even ally myself with other zombies. But that received a lot of complaints, and they ended up taking it out because people couldn't, you know, they couldn't go to major cities and stuff because there were zombies everywhere.
Oh.
Well, my attitude to that is probably, yeah, get over it. But
exactly.
No, I can see their point, if they're just trying to level up or whatever, but if at that point, if they're still playing well, they've probably been playing well for quite a while, so I think
they can take one day off.
Yeah. Might actually be better for them. Oh, that sounds terrible.
You hate gamers, don't you, Justin?
Confirmed.
Yep, you've all got really short attention spans, and you can't pay attention to anything, and you have no social life. Oh, wait, what am I saying?
But before we end, we should do something silly. We should say what TV series we think would graft well onto video game format.
Oh, yeah.
Keeping in mind that they have tried this a couple times, and it has never really worked very well. I am going to say... I was going to say Lost, but they already did a horrible Lost game. So that doesn't work.
You can feel free to ignore the Lost game. I think most other people do.
let's see. It would be cool to see a Western game akin to Deadwood that wasn't based on first-person shooting. And I don't know what format this game would be, because it would need to be probably much more like a BioWare game, because Deadwood was very much about politics, even local politics, gender politics. I mean, it was very much about how people manipulate other people. Mm-hmm. And so I would like to see that, and in every episode of this theoretical, impossible-to-design game, I would like to see a certain event happening in Deadwood, like Wild Bill comes to town, or George Hurst comes to town and you have to convince him to invest or something like that. I don't know. What do you think, Justin?
I've often thought it's bizarrely lacking that there's no Wild West RPG.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a perfect opportunity.
Wild Arms, I thought, had a Western feel. I don't know if anyone's played that.
I remember that. I might have played it, but that kind of was in the PlayStation era,
it
right?
Was, yeah.
That there was a huge number of RPGs. They all started to blend together. I don't know. How about you guys? Are there any specific TV series that you would like to see in a video game?
I'm just going to have to say Battlestar Galactica, because I love the show with a fiery passion. And, you know, space combat, like politics on board, that could be really cool. So, yeah.
It kind of reminds me of that... I forget the game. It was a PS1 game developed by Psygnosis. It had that same vibe, like the space combat vibe. It was three-dimensional. I can see that happening as the new Battlestar, not the old Battlestar.
Yeah. I could just see a Wing Commander 3, but if you take out the full motion video with Mark Hamill and put in some kind of BioWare-esque RPG elements, that's pretty good.
That's exactly right.
I could live with that.
Justin, any favorite TV shows that you would like to see, video game-ized?
I was thinking, I'd love to see The Wire, but the obvious assumption with The Wire is you just make a GTA.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's a bit easy. So I started thinking about it, and I'm thinking, I'd love to make a Wire, like, an XCOM game.
Huh.
But the point of The Wire is it's got to do with the different layers of Baltimore society.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like an XCOM game. You can play as... on one side or the other. On one side, you start with corner, dealing, and then you move up to supply, and then, you know, investing your money, things like that. On the other side, you start making busts, then move up to running the wiretap, become the police commissioner eventually. And so you just, the further you get in the game, the more information and the more power and influence and control and things you have to deal with as it goes further up the chain.
Yeah, I like it. Can I change my answer? I thought of another one.
What?
Quantum Leap.
Oh,
so
man.
Every episode would be a completely new game, completely formatted differently with the same character.
That Wario.
Yeah, Wario. That's one of the levels. He would be like, where have I left you now? Ah, Wario, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Oh, boy.
All right, well... hopefully developers have been listening to this, and we can look forward to a whole bunch of horrible games coming out in
a
few years. Okay, so I think we'll wrap it up right there. If you folks want to send your thoughts in about how video games relate to TV series, what elements work well in both formats, and what kind of silly video game adaptations of TV series you'd like to see, you can do so. Send it to experiencepoints@gmail.com.
Alternatively, you can leave your comments on the blog. We update Monday, Wednesday, and Friday evenings. And again, the comment section is always a nice place to chit-chat with us. Mm-hmm. Also, again, Justin Caverne gladly joined us from... we're glad to have Justin Caverne joining us from Cloaking the Elephant. So check out his site. We'll put it again in the show notes, as well as his Video Games and Human Values Initiative post. So
he's a busy man.
Yeah, thanks again for coming, Justin.
It's been a lot of fun. Cheers.
Cool. All right, until next time, everyone. Have fun.
Have fun. Bye.
Bye.